All right, so in today's episode of the Leadersmith podcast, I'm going to be talking with the economist Scott Pearson again. And today we're going to be talking about, you know, why we see things maybe differently than we ought to statistically. And we're going to get into this and try to unpack the phenomenon. And just stay tuned.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdis.
Okay, so we are going to be talking about why we see things differently than maybe they are. And so I have Scott Pearson back on the program with me. He was here twice before. And so I started thinking about this a couple of weeks ago. I was on Facebook. I saw this horrible video that had a woman was recording a black man being arrested. He's on his knees, has his hands up behind him, and she's like screaming and like, no, don't shoot him. Don't kill him. Like, now the officers all have their weapons drawn. And she is, I mean, if you listen to the video, it's heart-wrenching because she clearly believes that this man is about to be assassinated before her eyes. And so the question was, why is that fear so deep? What's going on? And so I brought Scott on the show because I wanted to talk about this because as I got going, and I'll let you talk in just a moment, Scott. I know I've talked the entire time, which is somewhat ridiculous when I have you on as a guest, but I have to set this up. Okay, so I posted this on Facebook, and then a former student, he chimed in and he said, I'd welcome a conversation about the statistical data that you're referring to, because I was talking about how, you know, improbable as it is, okay, let me actually read what I said. I said, if you want to gain some perspective, watch this 5-minute video of a woman recording the police apprehending a black man with guns drawn. The police are responding to an armed robbery, which is why they have their guns drawn. The woman filming is responding viscerally because she really believes that he is going to be gunned down because he is a black man and they are cops. Hear the fear in her voice. While I think this fear is unfounded, and statistically that appears to be so, she does not. This difference is critical. Understanding this difference might help us clearly see where we are in order to move forward. So I said that, and this former student said, I would welcome a conversation on the statistical data that you are referring to, because I don't believe that the fear is taught, but rather developed from experience, which is an interesting point. But either way, I really appreciate your message here. I strongly agree that understanding this fear will be helpful in moving forward. So the fear is real. And I haven't even let you talk yet, but I have to read this one more paragraph before I'm going to set you free. Okay. So I said here, so here's a rough cut. There's 21 million black males in the United States. Half are adults. For our purposes, older males are going to be balanced out by teenagers who might be in harm's way. So we have about 10.5 million. Now, 235 killed by police in 2019. That's the last full year of data. So the odds are 1 in 44,680 that you'll be shot by a policeman this year. Okay. Your odds of dying in the next hour in the world are 1 in 44,000. And moreover, I've included stats from the National Safety Council on the odds of dying from particular causes, and I would leave the link. And then I say the salience bias is at work. You see more of what you focus on, and it looms larger because of your focus. So note that everything I'm saying here, and I say this in all caps, note everything I'm saying here does not mean that this is not felt as if the odds were much, much worse. They just are not that low, statistically speaking. I hope this clarifies my statement. Okay, so I've talked long enough. Scott, tell me what's going on here. Why is it so felt so keenly, so perceived as like, well, I'm going to be shot because I'm black, or what? I mean, the statistics are really low.
So first of all, I think it's fair to say that we misperceive statistics all the time. Mm-hmm. We have a very skewed perception of what is really a risk and what is not. People I know that don't want to swim in the ocean because they're afraid of being attacked by a shark would think nothing about getting in a car and driving a mile to the convenience store.
Yeah.
But driving a mile to the convenience store is considerably riskier than swimming in the ocean. And yet we don't have that perception. So some of this comes from, because you have, how many times do people report the news of driving to a convenience store being a danger? You don't hear that.
Sure.
Right? It's not something we perceive to be a danger because it's given, it's taken as a normal part of life. Shark attacks are not a normal part of life. And so when they happen, it becomes a big news story and we report on it and we report on it endlessly. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, I prefer talking about shark attacks because I think it's something that is very clear and understandable. We know how many happen. It's infinitesimally small. And yet we perceive it to be much more common than it is because it's reported on breathlessly every time it happens and endlessly every time it happens. On average, there's one shark attack a year, right? And how many car accidents are there in a year?
Sure.
And so they've done studies and you driving a mile is about as risky as, you know, being at the beach sometime and being attacked by a shark.
So they say that half of all accidents happen within 10 miles of home. So I fixed it by moving 20 miles away.
That should work.
That way I don't have that problem anymore.
But I think you also put your finger on something else. You said something about how our perceptions are going to be skewed by our own experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we're talking about relationships with the police. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's ever had an adversarial relationship with one police officer at one point in time, where you feel like you've been unfairly treated, where you feel like you were at risk, where an officer pulled a gun or had his hand on his hip, I think you're more likely to perceive situations like the one that's reported as being a serious risk.
Yeah. And I don't think you even have to be unfairly treated. I think even if you're treated properly, the power imbalance between that officer and you as a citizen is already inflaming that feeling. I feel that when I'm dealing with the city clerk over some, you know, pointless little bit of government bureaucracy, I still feel that power imbalance because you can do whatever and I have no real recourse. So magnify that with the point of a gun, potentially, and you feel that even if it's all respect all the way around. And then I think when you couple that with policing practices that were meant to cut down on crime, like CompStat, right, which sends officers into the most crime-ridden places so you have more contacts than you otherwise would, even if you have respectful, and they're not necessarily, but even if you have respectful relations, you're having multiple contacts again and again that you feel that power imbalance. So sure, that there's a human factor where it's more keenly felt.
But so if you come from a group in society that you have encountered bad run-ins with police or family members have, I think it's understandable why you'd be more inclined to view something like that with fear, with concern, than if you come from a group of people that has not. I understand fully why there's such a difference in perception about some of these events.
Okay. So, you know, I with this on Facebook, just trying to unpack this phenomenon, because this was a student that I really like. I mean, this was a former student who is African-American, and he, you know, he said, well, that's interesting. I want to hear about, you know, why you think that's statistically so improbable. Okay. So here I posted a link with it with lifetime odds of death for selected causes. And these are all accidental deaths, heart disease, or you know, not you know, something like murder or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Heart disease, 1 in 6. That's the likelihood of you dying. Mm-hmm. Cancer, 1 in 7. All preventable causes of death are 1 in 25. So as opposed to 1 in 44,000, we're like a long way away from this. Now that's 1 in 44,000 this year. So it's going to be less over a lifetime. Okay, I get that. But still, nonetheless, I mean, we're dealing with different probabilities. Chronic lower respiratory disease, 1 in 26. Suicide, 1 in 86. Opioid overdose. This one shocked me. 1 in 98.
Yeah.
I mean, I was really surprised by that. And this is what you just talked about. Motor vehicle crash, 1 in 106. There is it's such a world of difference between motor vehicle probability and being shot by the police fatally. But I think what it is it's the reason why I still, you know, I know that it's unlikely that a terrorist is going to attack me. But I still get riled up about the idea because that just should not happen. Right.
Yes. And so that's really the same case. That's the same consideration. If it's preventable, you feel like you should be able to prevent it. And yet we don't have control over everything like that.
That's right. But again, I get in the car every day and it's a 1 in 106 probability of odds of dying from a motor vehicle crash, which is insane when you think about the difference, 1 in 100 as opposed to 1 in 44,000, and the difference is felt. But it's not about the statistics. It's about this felt psychological, this is not right, this shouldn't be happening, what's going on?
Exactly. And if it's something that doesn't fit with our perception of what justice should be, then we feel like we can change that. And I think justifiably we should change it. If it's wrong, we should seek to change it. But that said, I do think you're correct in that people perceive it to be a much more likely scenario than it truly is.
Yeah, and I think that's what's driving it. Until we actually do two things, until we recognize that the statistical probability is so low, let me start the other way. That's the second part. Until we recognize the fear that actually exists in the heart of that lady that's taking that camera, you know, that thing, like, they're going to kill him because he's black. Until we really understand that visceral fear is real, nothing's going to change. And until after we do that on the other side, until the other side recognizes this, there's not that much of a threat. It's wrong. Every time it's wrong. And now, every time is how many times, right? So somebody else chimed in on this on the same thing and said, here, and they gave me a video clip of Tucker Carlson unpacking how many unarmed African Americans were fatally shot last year, and he went through all he reduced it down to 10, and then of the 10, they were assaulted, you know, 5 assaulted a policeman first before the, you know, whatever, and he reduced it essentially to 2. Now if you reduce that all the way down, 2 people unarmed fatally shot by the police, let's say that's correct, your chance is, that's 4.3 times likelier, or you're 4.3 times more likely to be struck by lightning this year than you will be shot by a policeman. Now that still is not, I mean, the statistics are crazy, but that still doesn't make a dime's worth of difference if you feel that visceral fear, because that's a wrong that shouldn't be done anywhere. Like, you know, somebody said on that same thread, like, well, you know, any is too many. Absolutely. I fully agree that any one person harmed, that's injustice. We don't want that. So I'm trying to put these two things together, this way statistical improbability with that human dimension, because unless we factor in that human dimension, we're missing it. Like you're right about the sharks. Like, I'm sure there are other examples. You have other examples beyond the sharks of things that are so improbable? Like, for me, it's right to terrorism.
Terrorist attacks is the biggest one, I think, that we misperceive. We imagine that the risk of being attacked by a terrorist is enormous. And we imagine every time there's an explosion, we think about the explosion in Beirut.
Yeah.
You know, Beirut, it's an explosion, so it must be terrorists. And yet that may not prove to be true. In fact, I think what I'm hearing, and I haven't looked at it closely, but what I'm hearing is this is probably a result of chemicals that were misstored, right? So, you know,
I'm happy to hear that that's the case, but that is the first thing that went to my mind. And
right.
Wow. So we have these stereotypes that we operate off of, and stereotypes aren't necessarily bad. They're the way that we shortcut and understand the way that the world works. Like, I have a stereotype that alligators are bad and I probably shouldn't pet them because they might bite me. And that is a helpful stereotype, but others might not be so.
Well, we petted alligators last week. We went down to the Everglades for our
okay, but
trip this year, and
you're weird, and you live in
we're
Florida.
Still alive.
I stay away from them. These were wild alligators as opposed to the domesticated type of zoo. So anyway, yeah. So, I mean, there's a statistical improbability, and that's a real thing, right? But then there's this real human fear. And until we address both sides of that issue, I don't think we make any progress, any headway in what's going on in society.
But, you know, there's bad things that go on in society everywhere. And you mentioned heart disease and things like that. But I think it makes sense for people to focus their attention on those things that are preventable. If there is something that we can change in the way policing is done, in the way that different groups interact with each other, that will improve on this phenomenon, even if the percentages are not as high as people perceive, certainly we should do that, because that's where we can have an impact.
Yeah, and you know, as you said that, I was thinking this. There is a statistical difference, about a six-fold difference between the percentage of these things that happen to Black as opposed to white. Now, the statistics are improbable yet, but it's still, the percentage is many times greater for Black than white. So to the degree that you can improve whatever's going on, whatever's driving that, whether it is policing practices or the level of crime or whatever things are tied up, there's a bunch of factors. And to only say it's this or only say it's that is kind of silly, because there's multiple things tied up into the same, this big bundle of yarn. And it's not just, what I've learned over the last few months is that any one person who says this one thing is the answer is nuts, because it's not that one thing. Even the way that I would normally approach things and perceive it, it's not just that. My answer alone is incomplete, which is why I need to listen to other people and get their perspectives and try to understand and triangulate.
Most real answers are complicated and challenging to work through. If they weren't, most of those problems would have already been resolved. The easy low-hanging fruit has already been picked in most cases. And that's not to say there aren't some solutions that we can find that aren't terribly costly and aren't terribly difficult to implement, but most of those have already been done. And the issues that we still have usually take a lot of thought and a lot of care to resolve. It's not usually a matter of that somebody just isn't doing something.
Yeah.
It is usually because we haven't figured out how to resolve this yet, or there's some impediment to resolving it. And I think, you know, we look at a lot of these issues very simplistically. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been done, so we need to do it. That's true, and that's absolutely true. But that doesn't mean it's going to be easy.
It's usually not black and white, no pun intended, but it's usually not just this cut and dry, this or that. And that leads me to my quotation for contemplation for today, which was this: there are two sides of a coin, but multiple sides of human perspectives. And I really like that, because I think when you import that human perspective to whatever's going on, it just changes things. And you just can't, I mean, there are so many ways that different people, you have 10 people in a room and you have 12 different perspectives, right? And it's just different. So, okay, I'm going to give you the last word. What would you do to fix what's going on, given everything that we just discussed here? That's a hard thing.
To fix what's going on,
the human side and the statistical improbability side, how do you bridge those gaps?
I think people have to just increase their awareness of real statistics and learn to interpret them better. In terms of our perceptions, that's all we can do. But if you're talking about improving relationships between the police and the African-American community, I mean, that's a big challenge. And I think there's a lot that needs to go into that. I don't know that there's a simple answer there. I mean, we can do away with things like qualified immunity, which are, I think, a really challenging concept to accept.
So let me talk about that one very briefly. Let's try to unpack from the other side. If you do away with qualified immunity, how many people are willing to put their livelihoods on the line if they make an error in the process? I mean, it's like, from the police perspective, I would understand why they would not want to get even into the business of public service as law enforcement, because you're likely to get sued or hurt or lose your house if you make an error. And so the other side of that coin is, what will that do? How will that fracture law enforcement? But we have to think about, you know, we have to try to look at everything from every perspective here and see how that'll work. Will qualified immunity work? In some degree it will, and in some degree it won't. And so I'll let you keep going.
I fully understand why people in that career want to maintain qualified immunity. I get it. But it really, so we've done things like that in a lot of different spheres. You know, the government says, well, we're going to protect you if you go drill oil offshore. And then BP comes along and drills oil offshore irresponsibly.
Well, why are we even offshore to begin with? That was because we wouldn't let them drill on land, and we pushed them offshore because of other government regulations. So when you peel back the onion, you get to further and further back to government being very often the root of the problem that we're trying to correct to begin with.
But I think it's problematic every time you say, well, we're going to say that you're not responsible for what goes wrong in this case. And I think that's always a problem when you shield someone from responsibility. It never comes out well.
So even if, I'm not sure exactly where the line would be drawn with qualified immunity. If you are, quote, your qualified immunity, as long as you are following the actual rules and procedures, or if you go outside that, I'm not exactly sure where that line gets drawn if you change it. What do you think?
Well, is that something for the court to decide?
Well, I mean, the legislature should be deciding that, right? Or the city council or whichever organization should be deciding that.
Did they? I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, we went down a whole different path here.
Yeah. No, I mean, these are hard questions. I get that. And I think the problem is that when you create this kind of a false shield, then you automatically are going to create a situation where some people, a small number usually, but some people are going to feel like they can do what they want without accountability.
And certainly, nobody wants that. Always. Yeah, and nobody wants that. I mean, it's said differently, whether it's perceived as ACAB, which all cops are, let's say, bad instead of what it actually means, or there are a few bad apples, but nobody wants the bad. Right? I mean, everybody wants safety, and nobody wants the bad. So everybody's on board with that. But what's the best way to get there? Anyway, we've digressed with the with the question of what to do to fix the problem. But the long and short of this is, it's a thorny problem. It's just a thorny problem, and we have to try to anticipate and understand all sides if we're going to get anywhere near it. Hey, thanks for coming on the program. I appreciate that, and I hope that helps lend some perspective to what's going on and how we should be thinking both about the human dynamic as well as the statistical probability of whether something is going to happen or not.
Thank you for having me.